discovering the magic of a snowshoe hike by candlelight. Hi, I'm Kate Archer Kent, sitting in for Joy. Despite frigid conditions and spotty snowdrifts, there are dozens of these candlelight skiing and snowshoeing events happening all over Wisconsin, and they've created quite a following. Paul Holton is here to tell us all about them. He's a communication specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Kate.
So it definitely seems like these candlelight snowshoe and ski events are gaining in popularity. Why do you think that is?
Well, they're very fun family events. Most of them have bonfires, and many of them have grills where families come and cook out before the event or after the event. So they're just a very nice winter gathering, a nice chance to get out and beat cabin fever.
Yeah, and we were counting here. There are, I think, over 30 candlelight events planned this winter at Wisconsin State Parks and Forests and recreation areas. Is that an all-time high for the state?
No, I think we've had 30 in the past. I think maybe our record was 32. We were going to have 31 this year. Unfortunately, Lapham Peak decided to cancel. You're very right. These are extremely popular. They're probably some of the most popular events we have at our state parks. The event last year at Lapham Peak ended up going viral on the internet, and we had a Facebook post, and then I think it went to like a meetup group, and then initially on the Facebook group, all of a sudden there were like 9,000 people had registered to show up, and many did show up, and it totally overwhelmed the parking capacity for the Lapham Peak unit, and it actually backed up traffic on the interstate. So we had to bring in the State Patrol and the Waukesha County Sheriff's Department to control traffic. So Lapham Peak is reevaluating, and they'll come back and have it again in the future, but they decided this year to forego it until they can make sure they can keep it under control.
So when Wisconsin wants to get outside, they really want to get outside.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not uncommon. We Mirror Lake last year had 2,200 at their, even during the frigid weathers like we have now. Last year, February, we had a very frigid period, and we still had an average of 200 people show up at each of those events.
Okay, take us through one of these events for someone who has never gone before. What should we expect?
Okay, they're generally put on what would be called our easy trails. So they're not overly challenging. They're usually illuminated by several hundred candles. A couple of the parks, instead of candles, use the tiki torches. So they're spaced out every 100 feet or so. I got to say right away that we would not be able to do this without the support of our friends groups. The volunteers are extremely important to Wisconsin State Parks program. And much of the work that's put into holding these events is done by our individual friends groups. So in some cases, they'll make ice buckets, and they'll make these well in advance, and then the candles go inside the little ice buckets, and they're illuminated that way. Other parks put them into paper bags. Some just have the candles out in the open. And so it's a very easy ski, not overly lit, but certainly well enough lit that you can see what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Each event could be a little bit different. Some parks have hikes. Some have just skiing. Some have snowshoeing. Rib Mountain State Park is only snowshoeing. Lake Kaganza State Park is only skiing. But in general, most of the other parks will have both skiing and either hiking or snowshoeing.
We're talking with Paul Holton about how we can enjoy our state parks and nature preserves by candlelight, these candlelight ski and snowshoe events happening all over Wisconsin, and you can find them on calendar events pages. Paul, wondering, if you don't own your own skis or own your own snowshoes, can you rent them at the parks?
We have limited rental at some of the parks. And again, I would say if you go to the Wisconsin DNR website, dnr.wi.gov, and in the search window just put in candlelight, that'll bring up the entire list of events. And if rentals are available, it'll say that in the event listing. There aren't that many, but there are some. We certainly have. We don't. The parks themselves do not have skis, but we do have a couple of events where we cooperate with outdoor outfitters, and they will bring in some skis or snowshoes. And then we also have a number of properties that do own their own snowshoes, and those will be available on a first-come, first-served basis.
Okay, Paul, what happens if there's no snow for one of these events?
If there's no snow, they're generally held as hikes. The exception might be if there's, like, marginal snow and the park wants to try to preserve the conditions. Should they improve, they may not want to have people trampling all over the groomed ski trail. In that case, perhaps they might cancel. Parks are going to definitely cancel if there's hazardous conditions. So if we have an ice storm, which would make hiking treacherous, they'll cancel. Extremely cold temperature, they may cancel. Blue Mountain State Park actually this weekend has already decided to cancel its event. And again, it's not just the concern over our visitors, that is a concern, but it's a major concern for our staff and our volunteers. There'll be many of our Friends Group volunteers and our staff will be out there from 4 until well after 11 o'clock, putting the candles out, preparing bonfires, getting grills going. So when it is extremely cold, we have to be concerned, especially about our volunteers, which, again, are very important to our parks.
And what about our pets? Are pets allowed?
We have, I believe, two. In general, no, because most of these are held on groomed ski trails. And in Wisconsin State Parks, trails that are groomed ski trails are closed to hikers and snowshoers and pets when they are groomed. Conversely, on the trails that are not groomed ski trails, pets may be allowed. But for this type of event, it's not an ideal situation for pets.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of young children. These are really family events, so you'll see a lot of young children. They can get quite crowded. But we do have a couple of, actually Blue Mountain who canceled, but they'll be holding another one on February 7th.
Oh, okay.
And they allow pets. The southern unit of the Kettle Moraine State Forest at the Nordic Trail, generally pets are prohibited, but for the Candlelight Ski at that facility, they do allow pets.
It's kind of hit and miss, right?
It's kind of hit and miss, but in general, these are not
Right. And you talked about the situation at Blue Mountain State Park. What about the other parks that are hosting events this weekend?
They're on. Both Mirror Lake and Wildcat Mountain confirmed with me yesterday that they are going ahead.
And the event calendar stays up to the minute, I would suppose, if conditions change?
Yes, that's correct. And also, we're going to be using our Twitter feed this year to also alert people if there's cancellations or even if we would have a situation like we had at Lapham Peak last year where we're overwhelmed. We'll be putting out tweets to the media. So anyone can follow our Twitter feed as well.
And you mentioned getting the grills going. So outside of skiing and snowshoeing, what other activities are usually going on at these events?
Most of them do have hot chocolate or other beverages available.
Good.
And those are sold again, these are fundraisers for our friends groups. And the friends groups pour all this money back into the park, paying for the candles and improvements. I mean, our park friends groups are major fundraisers. We have had several, large donations that have come in recent years that would provide amenities that we would never have been able to provide without our friends groups.
And will you be participating, Paul?
I will. Yeah, I'll be at Mirror Lake this weekend.
And what do you love about these events?
Well, it's kind of it's just a very camaraderie type atmosphere. People are standing around the fire, enjoying it, getting out. It's fun to see all the little kids struggling to, make it down the trail in the dark. So they're just a really enjoyable get-togethers.
Are there any other events coming up at the state parks in the coming months? Maybe it's too soon to think about spring, but you know what? We have to think about that in this frigid weather. Look forward to some warmth.
Well, our big spring events at the parks, and again, this is with our friends groups, we have our Work Play Earth Day events, and these are held over a series of 3 weekends in the spring around Earth Day. And these are events where we have people, our friends groups and other volunteers come to the parks, and in the morning spend time helping prepare the parks for the onslaught of visitors in the summer. They might be painting picnic tables or cleaning up campgrounds, things like that. And then there's usually a hike or an interpretive program of some kind that takes place after the work is done.
Sounds great. Thank you so much, Paul, for your time this
You're
morning.
Welcome. Thank
Happy
you.
Trails. Paul Holton is communications specialist for the DNR. Let's hear from you. Have you done a candlelight outdoor trail event before? What do you think? Call in with tips, 800-642-1234. Post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. News headlines from NPR are coming up next, and then we'll continue this conversation on the trails.
It's just me and my snowshoes, my snowshoes. It's just me and my snowshoes, my snowshoes. It's just me and my snowshoes, my snowshoes.
Taking to Wisconsin's trails on snowshoes or skis for a hike is very popular. And we're going to stay on this train of thought. I'm Kate Archer-Kent in for Joy. Our next guide to help us navigate the parks is Walter Rain. He's an avid cross-country skier, frequent contributor to Silent Sports magazine, the author of Beyond Berkey Fever. He will be competing, get this, in his 15th American Birkebeiner race this year. Walter, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
So before we get into some specifics here, we are just amazed. This is your 15th time competing in the Berkey. Tell us about this race and what keeps bringing you back to it.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the Berkey, I'm always amazed that people in Wisconsin haven't heard about the American Birkebeiner. And there's plenty that have, of course, but it's essentially it's the Boston Marathon of cross-country ski races. It's this massive event here that we're fortunate enough to have in northern Wisconsin. You get athletes from all over the world competing there. World champion athletes compete there, gold medalists. It's part of an international series of races. So at the end of February, if you get a chance, you know, go to Berkey.com, get some information on it, and go up and spectate the event. It's really one of the spectacles of Wisconsin.
And tell me, how long is the race? Remind us.
It's a 50-kilometer race, so that's 31 miles. And it's become part of a family tradition in my house. My mom grew up right on Lake Hayward. The race finishes on Lake Hayward. And mm-hmm. She does it every year as well, so she's closing in on her 30th Berkey. So it becomes kind of a it gets more and more impressive because the older I get, I realize how hard the race actually is. So I'm more and more impressed with her achievement every year.
Wow, how old is your mom? I'm just doing the math.
That's not polite to say, but this is
wow, that is amazing. That makes us feel a little bit like underachievers here.
Well, it's a great race to put on your calendar because it keeps you honest. You know, it's every year I get older, it's harder to keep the pounds off. So it's something to have something like that on the calendar that you're a little bit afraid of that keeps you out there exercising.
How is it best to watch the Berkey? How should we watch it?
Well, you can go out there and just go out on go on Main Street. It finishes on Main Street Hayward, so that's a good place. All the athletes come through and they're announcing the names, so that's really fun. Otherwise, you could snowshoe out. There's access points throughout the trail, and there's volunteer stations along the course, so you could go check those out. But more and more, we're seeing people out on fat bikes riding out and cheering on the racers, and it gets between all the different races, it's approximately 8,000 to 10,000 competitors there, so it's a huge, huge event.
Yeah, and there are some kind of quirky traditions that go on with the Berkey.
This is some fun things. And it's a big festival, so leading up to the race, they have sprint days, they have the Barky Berkey, which is a ski drawing event where people get their dogs and the dogs pull the skiers, which is kind of a fun race to watch. They always have the mascots who are dressed up like two Viking warriors during the race. So there's a lot to go and see.
Yeah, and there's people cheering on with their bells. I mean, it's pretty loud, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, of course, it all depends on the temperature of the day. But usually by late February, we're getting a bit of a warmer sun, you know, a little bit more sunshine. So it's a little bit warmer. But, you know, it's a little bit less festive if it's 10 below zero. And I've done some Berkeys in that temperature range as well.
How do you pace yourself over 31 miles? That's a long way, Walter.
Well, cross-country skiing, you know, it's not like running a marathon. You know, running a marathon is a constant effort, where at least with skiing, you get to go downhill. You can relax on the downhills. It's one of those things where the Berkey is such a big, big event that it's almost not, you're just trying to finish that one. In a race which doesn't have as many people, you're actually allowed to use race tactics. But the Berkey, you're trying to get around people for the whole time, and the course gets kind of mushy. So I'm more and more of my tactic is just get to the end, you know, get another one for the pin. They give you a pin for finishing every year and carry on.
Well, let's dial back the intensity here for a moment and look at cross-country skiing in general, a little less strenuous than the Birkebeiner. What do we need to know before we head out for cross-country skiing? What are some tips you would have?
Well, I'd always consult with a doctor first, make sure you're in healthy enough condition to do it. It's one of those sports where you end up working yourself a lot harder than you realize you're working. You know, you're going uphill, you're using your full body, so it's really easy to get the heart rate going.
Mm-hmm.
So just be a little bit cautious on that. But and that's even when you're trying to go relatively easy. If you're breaking trail, if you got a nice groomed trail, it's totally different than if you're breaking trail. But there are ways where you can get just the basic entry level ski and basically just go for a walk on a snowy area, and it's just a fabulous way to get outside. Everybody gets cabin fever living up here. You know, you shouldn't be afraid of the winter, the snow, and that seems silly to say for people living in Wisconsin, but there are some that kind of just lock themselves in all winter, and it just starts driving you nuts. And, you know, it is just beautiful out. If you get out into a nice snow-covered wilderness, it's the absolute best way to see it. You know, you stay warm, and I think most people have already the clothing that they need from hunting, and they have the know-how from how to get dressed to get outside. But you'll be surprised how quickly you warm up once you go out and start hiking around on some cross-country skis.
I would imagine that is true. We're talking with Walter Rain, an avid cross-country skier, veteran cross-country skier. He contributes to Silent Sports magazine and a longtime racer in the American Birkebeiner race, author of Beyond Berkey Fever. Walter, tell us a bit more about groomed trails. What does that mean? Where do we find these really good introductory groomed trails around Wisconsin?
Yeah, well, it's an art form. There are two different cross-country skiing techniques. There's skate technique and the traditional classic technique, or diagonal stride. So most little villages here in Wisconsin have a ski trail area somewhere. A good place to go and look for them. There's a trail guide on Cyclova XC. There's also a trail guide on skinnyski.com, where you can go and check out what the courses are like and what the state of the trail. But you know, we have to be very appreciative of all our groomers. They go out and they take for skate skiing. They groom about a 7 to 10 foot wide flat section, and then because skating looks a little bit more like roller skiing, and then they track the section for the cross or for diagonal stride. So we always have to find the groomers and give them a pat on the back, because it's kind of a thankless job. If you go up to the American Birkebeiner Trail, their trail is I think 10 meters wide. It's a World Cup quality trail. So they use the big piston bullies out there to groom that.
Well, let's also get some input here. Let's hear from you. Have you skied, cross-country skied at a favorite trail? 800-642-1234. How do you like to cross-country ski? What is a crazy cool challenge or just a great quiet cross-country ski outing? Fill us in. Tell us where to go. 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Walter, you are such a pro at this. Wondering, how do you decide snowshoeing or cross-country skiing? Where do your preferences lie? And do you have to be in a certain state of mind to do one or the other?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic. There are a series of snowshoe races as well. You can do snowshoe marathons, and I've done a couple of snowshoe 10Ks. I definitely prefer cross-country skiing. I just like the rest I occasionally get when you get to go down a hill. But snowshoeing is fun, too. It's one of those, and there's kind of a medium, too, when you have the recreational touring cross-country ski. It's sort of a similar type. You know, they have a smaller sneak ski, not a race ski. So there's very much an overlap. Sometimes if there's new snow and they haven't groomed any of the trails yet, you might as well pick snowshoeing or your breaking trail on your wide backcountry skis. So it all just kind of depends on what the course is like. But, I mean, if you have a very, very well-groomed skate course out there, I can't pass up the skate technique because that's the fastest and the most fun for me.
And what about etiquette on these trails? If you've strapped on snowshoes, where should and should not you go, or what is the etiquette?
Yeah, that's very important. The big thing is don't, and this applies to both user groups of cross-country skis as well, is that you don't wreck the classical tracks, the set tracks. Because those, once they get set up, it's hard to create them. You create them, and it takes them overnight to set up. And you don't want people just obliterating them, walking over them with snowshoes or skiing over them if they're doing skate technique. Other than that, snowshoeing, you do have the advantage where you don't even need a trail. You can just kind of hike through the woods and break your own trail. And most of these places in the area have snowshoe trails as well as skiing trails. You do have to be careful, though, because there's an additional user group now in fat bikers. So it might be easy to confuse a snowshoe trail or a fat bike trail for a snowshoe trail. And although fat bikers don't go particularly fast compared to mountain bikers, still, you just don't have as much maneuverability to get out of people's way. So just look for posted signs when you go to any kind of state park or recreation area. Make sure you're on the right trail. And it's, you know, more for your safety than for anything else.
And what about the money investment in this on a nice pair of snowshoes? How costly is it? Are there perhaps ways to get used, or should you not go this route?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I think you can, most houses in the area, if you just kind of dig through closets, you'll probably find a pair of snowshoes. That's how I learned how to ski. You know, most places you go, you can find snowshoes or you can find some skis. People have them. The skis tend to be the old ones with the three-ring bindings, which, you know, it's not as good of a binding system, but it's totally effective for your first time out there. A new pair of snowshoes runs, I think, about $150. I'd recommend that you go to a shop rather than look for a discount pair on something like Amazon, because, you know, you don't want to get something that's got faulty bindings on it or just not very well-designed bindings.
You need someone to make some suggestions and fittings for you, or just give you advice in person.
Yeah, I think that would be ideal. But a lot of what you find on Amazon is just not quite as good a quality. I mean, you're going to find some very, very inexpensive product on Amazon, whereas if you go to the local shops, they're going to have something that's good. You're going to pay a little bit more, but you're going to be happy you paid more.
What's the advantage?
Well, snowshoes are nice because all you have to do is buy the snowshoe, and it comes with a binding set, and then you just use your regular boots. Whereas with cross-country skis, you have to buy the bindings, poles, and skis and boots. So it's a little bit more of an investment for skis.
Yeah, yeah. We're exploring skiing, cross-country skiing and snowshoeing. Trail season in Wisconsin is here, and we're navigating the trails right now with veteran cross-country skier Walter Rain. We'd love to hear from you. Are you a skier or a snowshoer, perhaps? If so, what do you love about it? Where do you like to go? What's the best trail in your neck of the woods? And if you've never gone before, what questions do you have for Walter? Because he can definitely give you advice. 800-642-1234 or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Once again, the number 800-642-1234. Now, Walter, you've talked about trail etiquette. I know I've been on trails before and have seen some snowmobiling around me, and that's also a little bit concerning. I'm not sure where snowmobiles can go and not go.
For the most part, snowmobiles are not permitted on cross-country ski trails. They do cross, for example, the American Birkebeiner Ski Trail.
Ah.
And actually, the skiers have the right-of-way in that case.
Okay.
Although there was an issue a couple years ago where the snow there's a stop sign right on the snowmobile trail. Well, some joker of a snowmobiler had taken the stop sign and put it the other way so it faced the skiers, which was a little bit dangerous because the skiers are a little bit more vulnerable than snowmobilers. But for the most part, and everybody always kind of grumbles. These are two user groups that kind of grumble at each other, but it's gotten much, much better over the years. Everybody seems to respect each other's territory. And I've been in situations, too, where, you see snowmobilers and cross-country skiers working together because it's to our mutual benefit that everybody knows what's going on and we're supporting each other's trail systems.
So how often are you out there on the trails, Walter?
Oh, gosh, I try to get out as much as possible. It's you're making a tent daily, but usually maybe 4 days, 5 days a week.
Do you find yourself improving in cross-country skiing over time, or have you plateaued?
Oh, these days, I'm 41 now, so I'm just happy to be able to continue to get out there and be able to do it. I was a lot faster when I was 165 pounds as opposed to now, so it's really one of those, the big hills that are harder and harder to climb every year, but it's just a rewarding and fun sport. And I think I'm changing my objectives. I'm still a functional skier. I'm not out there crashing and falling down. I'm just happy to be able to complete the long races.
Well, David on Facebook tells us that he'll snowshoe again when we have better snow and more reasonable temperatures. It is really, really cold out there. Wind chill advisories, of course. How are we supposed to dress, and what kind of precautions do you take as a veteran skier?
Yeah, the cold is definitely something you have to deal with. First of all, I would say you have to cover up all your exposed skin. So you can either get, there's a product called Dermatone. It's like it's basically just Vaseline with some sunblocking element in it. You could just get Vaseline. So if you cover up your face, make sure you wear like a balaclava, get everything covered up. And the other thing I do is I like those chemical toe warmers. I put those on your toes. But sometimes if you take them and you put them on your, I put them on my thigh as well, or just a couple toe warmers or hand warmers in your gear, and you're out to go. I prefer to do classical technique when it's cold rather than skate technique, because skate technique kind of opens you up, makes you a little wider. Plus, you're using longer poles, so your hands are higher up in the air.
Uh-huh.
And if your hands get over your heart, it seems your hands get colder. So if you're using classical technique, you're keeping your hands a little lower, and that helps keep them warm. You switch to mitts. But it's just a matter of learning how to dress right. And once you get out there, as long as you don't have skin exposed, you're going to heat up and you're going to go fine. I always tell people, hey, it's just about the right equipment. They send people into space. They don't have any problems because they're wearing the right equipment. So you can certainly find the right equipment to go outside when it's below zero in Wisconsin.
Tell me about how you're seeing snow conditions right now around the state, Walter.
Oh, it's actually pretty good. I'm here in Chippewa Falls, and we've got great skiing out at Tower Ridge. I'm going to head up this weekend to Ironwood because there's an event, the Sisu Marathon up in Ironwood, Michigan. I guess it's only 31. It used to be a marathon. But I haven't been skiing recently in St. Croix, but there's a lot of snow. I've been out, so I've been happy so far.
How often do you do these races?
Well, it used to be more. It seems they used to have races all through December, but now the December snow is so sketchy that most of those races are canceled. I have about four that I like to do. The Sisu race, I like to do the Pre-Berkey. There's the...
Where's the Pre-Berkey? What's the Pre-Berkey about?
The Pre-Berkey is 2 weeks before the American Birkebeiner. It's also a very large race, also on the American Birkebeiner ski course. I think they get around 1,000. They have a 42K and a 26, I think, is the shorter race.
Okay.
So that is a... And it goes the other way. It starts in Hayward and goes north, so it's all uphill.
Ah.
That's a really fun race, yeah.
All uphill. We're talking with Walter Rain, who expert cross-country skier, and getting some advice from him on how we should navigate the trails via cross-country skiing or snowshoeing here in Wisconsin. Add your voice, 800-642-1234, or post your thoughts about skiing on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We'd love to see your pictures, too. News is next from NPR.
I've been to Allen. Bronze Grove, Emerald Grove, Cedar Grove, Union Grove, Soldiers Grove, Hales, Carners, Slades, Carners, Abel's, Carners, Newber, Carners, Pipersville, Pittsville, Deansville, Deansville, Reeseville, Janesville, Platteville, Orphanville, Fortville, Blanchville, Plainville, Plain, Plainfield, Nutterville, Butternut. I've been over there.
One thing we know, wherever we roam, Wisconsin absolutely loves its cross-country skiing and snowshoeing. Walter Rain is our guide. He's a frequent contributor to Silent Sports Magazine, author of Beyond Berkey Fever. He'll be competing in his 15th American Birkebeiner race this year, alongside his mom as well. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, in for Joy. It's time for New Year's resolutions, of course. And did you make one that involves the outdoors in winter? We'd love to hear about it. And we'd like to know what you're setting out to do in the many miles of trails here in Wisconsin. Where should we go? Also, what tips do you have for cross-country skiing? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Send an email to talk@wpr.org. Post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Hey, Walter, we were talking about candlelight skiing earlier on in the program with Paul Hopin. Have you done this before?
Oh, absolutely. That's a wonderful way to teach people a love for the sport. I took my wife out. My wife is from Peru in South America, so she'd never seen snow before, and this was a great way to, you know, it's because it's low. Usually you're on a limestone, like, railroad bed, and they have the candlelight. They take ice blocks and put the candles in them. So it's just a really beautiful and fun way to just kind of go out and appreciate the evening on some skis. You only go for, you know, half hour. You can go as long as you want, but you can make it a shorter little event, and it's a really fun family way to spend some time on skis.
Do you find that they're well attended? Are there a lot of people who turn out?
That all depends on weather conditions. It's always, they're very popular. You see a lot of people out there, and it's a fun festive. It's a festive way to spend the evening.
And we have Bonnie on Facebook who wrote to us about great ski trails in central Wisconsin. Levis Mount Trail, found between Neillsville and Maryland, is a great one. Do you know about that one, Walter?
I haven't been there. That's out of my range.
Well, she told us you can snowshoe, fat bike, and cross-country ski at the site. There are also trails near Rib Lake, Forest Springs, and the Rib Lake Trail. How about that one?
Rib Lake, I think, is the 9 Mile ski area. I think those are the Badger State Games.
Ah, gotcha. Well, she said they're her favorite trails around her home. They're well-groomed, and she adds she can't wait till Monday when the weather gets above zero. Walter, when it is this cold, do you still get out there and ski?
Yeah, I think it's important because the races tend to be, you know, you always have to go and teach yourself how to deal with the cold, you know, on the training day, because the races, you know, you can't decide to sit at home on those days. So, yeah, I try to go out there and just kind of muscle through it. I usually dial back. The victory on a very, very cold day is to just strap your skis on and do some amount of skiing, you know, but I think it's just important to get out there and feel it. And once you get out there, you realize it's not that bad. But you should dial the intensity back a little bit. You don't really want to be breathing in that super cold air, you know, at your highest level.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the phones with Frank from Portage. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Great. Where do you ski?
Well, there's a new one. There's a Sand Valley Golf Course, which has opened up in Rome, Wisconsin. And they've actually for the wintertime, they've done cross-country skiing. And next year, they will be doing snowshoeing as well. And it's like 14,000 acres up there.
Wait, say it now. Tell us slowly, where is this?
Sand Valley Golf Course is at Rome, Wisconsin, right below about a half hour south of Wisconsin Rapids.
Aha. Uh-huh. And it just opened.
Yeah, it's a golf course for Michael Kaiser, and he has cross-country skiing going on there now. And it is secluded. It is beautiful. You got the rolling hills, the trees. It's just an amazing place to go.
Walter, what do you think about skiing on golf courses?
Oh, it's great. We would always, in the early season, when you just get a little bit of snow, we'd always ask permission and go ski at the local golf courses, just because, you know, the grounds are very well tended and they're flat. A lot of the ski trails need a lot more snow because there's ridges and ruts. So, yeah, skiing at golf courses is wonderful.
Hey, Frank, are you an avid skier?
I have been doing it for a couple of years now, and when they have opened that up there, it's not just on the golf courses. That's the best part. Since they're developing it now, you get to go where nobody's been in so long. I mean, it's just a beautiful area up there.
And what do you love about cross-country skiing?
Just being outside. Granted, not today. It's a little chilly. But, yeah, other than that, it's just the peace and the quiet. You get a great cardio workout as well. So,
Besides Sand Belly, are there any other courses that you go to? Any other great spots?
Actually, no. We own 30 acres, and we do a lot of my own property.
And
so we do a lot at our own place. And then when they opened this one up, we decided to go up there and check it out. So,
do you groom your own trails?
Yes.
How long does that take?
Well, you have a four-wheeler, and you pull some things behind it to make it nice and flat, and then you're able to use it that way. So,
Well, thanks so much for your call, Frank. Walter, in the last few minutes here, any other hot spots around the state, hot spots, so to speak, right, that we should check out, that we should keep on our radar for skiing?
Yeah, well, the American Birkebeiner Ski Trail is really spectacular. In Eau Claire, we've got Tower Ridge. That's nice because they've got this beautiful warming hut. They've got this huge facility up there you can go to. Hickory Ridge up in Bloomer is a tremendous set of trails. That's where Dave Langraff, the Berkey founder, used to train. So there's a lot of places. And like I said, you can check out on the trail directory on cyclovexfee.com or skinnyski.com. Skinny Ski actually posts trail updates frequently. Yep, so they let you know what the conditions are like.
So you check out those resources, Skinny Ski. What was the other one?
Cyclova XC.
Aha.
That's the CycloveXC.com.
Okay. So you can kind of get a sense, and we'll put those links out there, of course, on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, but that gives you a sense on how conditions are before you even get there.
Yep.
Would you say that's a good idea to always check in with where you're going before you go?
Honestly, just early in the season, once there's snow on the ground, I'm pretty content to just head out and assume the places are going to be okay. I like to check before events so I know how to prepare my skis. But these days, just for training, I hardly do much to my skis anymore.
Walter, it's been such a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Walter Rain is a veteran cross-country skier, author of Beyond Berkey Fever. He's competing in his 15th Birkebeiner this year. Continue the conversation on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Post your favorite winter trail adventures and don't forget your photos. We'd love to see them. It's time for Wisconsin Life. When Pam Furderbar moved into a home near a ski hill at age 10, her parents thought that skiing just might be her sport. It didn't quite work out that way.
When I lived in Los Angeles, winter preparedness meant turning on a pool heater. Here in Wisconsin, come Halloween, my pops puts a shovel, blankets, snowmobile suit, heavy rubber boots, and a roll of duct tape into the back of his Suburban. He is either the most winterized person in the Midwest or a conscientious serial killer. When I was 12 years old, we moved into the first home we owned in Delafield, at the top of a ski hill called Little Swiss Vale. My folks discussed the possibility that skiing might be my sport. Thanks to my grandma's succulent Czech butter cookies, I lacked the body for ballet, swimming, tennis, roller, or ice skating. We already had a closet crammed with pink tulle, a tennis racket, skates, and my swim fins, so it seemed prudent to rent ski equipment. When I arrived for my lesson, I was wearing 4 pair of long underwear, 3 sweaters, 5 pairs of socks, and a snowsuit that barely zipped due to the extra layers and Grandma's butter cookies. A busload of children from the Holy Assumption Blind School disembarked in the parking lot and were escorted to the rental hut where they were fitted for boots, skis, and poles. My lesson consisted of sidestepping partway up the bunny hill, then snowplowing a few feet to the bottom. I watched other kids take the tow rope to the top, pivot, and shoosh, shoosh, shoosh elegantly down the hill. I wanted that. I trudged to the tow rope, clutched the rough hemp between my woolly mitts, and was jerked a few feet up the hill, ultimately unable to hang on thanks to a lack of upper body strength. The mittens were torn off my hands. Stuck to the coarse fibers, they passed through an enormous cog at the top of the hill, before returning to the start. where my dad plucked them off the rope. I watched the blind children take their lessons on the bunny hill while my dad went to the Suburban for a roll of duct tape, which he used to secure the mittens to my wrists. My dad reasoned the plan would work as long as my arms weren't ripped from their sockets. Taped up, I gripped the cable tightly and hung on for dear life. About two-thirds of the way up, I realized my mitts were stuck to the hem. I watched helplessly as the huge cog at the top chomped the rope in its giant teeth, pulling me toward its giant maw. I furiously wiggled my hands, trying to free them from the mittens, but thanks to the duct tape, they were snug around my wrists. Only a few feet from the grinding colossus, I finally jerked my hands out of the mittens. Time stood still, as did I, for a nanosecond. Then I began to slide backwards. Quickly gaining speed and momentum, I hurtled down the hill, picking off blind children who had taken the tow rope behind me. They never saw me coming. One by one, down they went. At the bottom of the hill, my dad yanked my feet out of the ski boots while they were still clamped to the skis. I ran to the truck in my socks while my dad hurled the skis, boots, and poles into the rental hut. We sped off as a team of instructors, teachers, and bystanders rushed to help the children scattered in the snow. At dinner that night, it was decided I should try piano lessons.
Pam Furderbar is the author of Feng Shui and Charlotte Nightingale. Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. Thanks to producer Chris Molina for gliding us through this hour. Coming up on Monday at this time, game shows are making a comeback. We'll look at why the networks are finding them a sure bet. That's coming up on Monday at 6. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Stay with us.